Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. My name is Zachary Morgan. I'm one of the co-hosts of Pop Health Podcast. I am joined by the other co-host, Gavin Ward. Gavin, good morning.
Hey, Zach. Nice to see you.
Yeah, and we are in our Irvine location in beautiful, sunny Southern California. This office is much bigger than the last time that I'm here, but it is always nice to be back down in Orange County. And we're joined again by one of our favorite guests, Bob King of Legally Nanny. Bob, nice to see you.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you guys.
Now, Bob. Sorry, Zach. I was just going to say, Bob was actually one of our first 10 guests, I would say, maybe even first 5 guests.
I was sworn to secrecy. I couldn't even publish it on our social media because you were keeping this under wraps, as a matter of fact.
So. That's good. Thank you for the reminder.
Well, with that being said, one thing that I want to encourage people is that, you know, a lot of the details that we dove into last time with Bob, we're going to try to avoid just having a repeat of last time's podcast. So I would invite you to check out our website, pophealthpodcast.com, or find us on the App Store at the on iTunes, and check out Bob's podcast from last year. You can really dive into some of the other nitty gritty. But Bob, since it's been about a year, what have you been up to? Anything exciting going on? Any good stories from the past year?
It's been a crazy year, both with litigation and government investigations. There is something in the water, gentlemen, because I have been flying all over the country. I have been defending class actions and single plaintiff cases and audits from both state and federal. It has just been rocking and rolling.
Yeah. Anything in particular that has stuck out or that you've seen a rise in the last year?
Sure. We've settled two class actions. We always defend. I never represent employees. I always wear the white hat. And so we represent the employers. We settled two large class actions this year against home care agencies. We've seen a number of individual families also get sued or have administrative claims against them as a result of not following wage and hour laws. I think the compliance, both on a government basis and on the plaintiff's bar basis, is becoming more and more treacherous. People are aware. Home care is growing up, right? And so what's happening is people know about it. And because they know about it, unfortunately, it attracts the government's interest and it attracts plaintiff's lawyer's interest.
Right. Yeah, we were talking about that a little bit off mic, that the profile of non-medical home care is really raising. And obviously that has tremendous benefits for the industry. But again, it also comes with certain pitfalls that maybe it didn't have when it wasn't at the forefront of everybody's mind on extended care.
You bet. I mean, like, you know, we were talking off mic, Uber is a good example of this. All of a sudden, Uber became big. And what happened? The government came after it and it got sued, right? Well, it's the same sort of thing with home care. You're seeing more and more of that.
Right. When to kind of kick off on that, I mean, we are sitting here in California. I think that California, at least in our mind, because this is where we spend most of our time and do most of our work, has really been hit hard by some of that high profile with a lot of the changes that are happening, you know, whether it's changes with minimum hours or minimum wage or with the recent licensure. How has that really impacted the work that you do? I know that you were saying that home care has pretty much filled up your docket of work, but how have those changes really shaped what you're doing for home care companies?
Sure. I mean, when you think about it and step back, if you look back 4 or 5 years ago, you were basically just paying a caregiver minimum wage. There was no overtime, and that was basically about it. If you lived in San Francisco and had somebody there, you had a few local laws, but by and large, it was it. Fast forward to today, you have federal and state overtime. You have minimum wage increases, not only in the state, but in local municipalities.
Right.
So if you drive through a county or a city and you do that enough, you're going to have to pay that minimum wage for that time. You have paid sick leave. Okay. You have licensure. You have all of these regulations that are hitting home care agencies, and it's become very expensive, and the compliance has become dangerous. So in my practice, we help people comply with these things. But that's become a day-to-day sort of full service entity. Right. You have to almost have somebody dedicated, no matter how big or small your home care agency is, just to managing these the legal compliance issues.
Yeah, no, that's true. I know Zach and I, in our regular roles, we've seen our HR and compliance team grow due to the needs, just with general growth, but also with licensure. Now, one thing I found interesting, you mentioned the municipalities increasing minimum wage in LA County, where a significant number of state-funded caregivers through IHSS are paid, who helped push the minimum wage laws higher and were excited. LA County realized after they voted for the minimum wage increases that, oh, shoot, this is going to impact us here in LA County. Let's exempt that same population that pushed the minimum wage up. And it made me laugh.
The hypocrisy is stunning. Okay, like government says, oh, these people need to earn a living wage, all this other stuff. But we can't afford it. We, the government, which takes in billions of tax dollars, we can't afford it. Right. Widows, pensioners, disabled individuals on fixed incomes, they can afford it.
Right. Yeah.
But the government, no. We only get billions in tax revenue. We can't do that. It's just asinine.
And I think that that's an important thing with the different minimum wages. I think that a lot of people don't understand what you were talking about different ordinances in different cities. The city of San Diego, for example, the minimum wage is set on a scale there to be raised over the next few years, but that's only for the city of San Diego. So what I think people don't understand is that you could be on one side of a block and have a certain minimum wage, which translates into certain costs for a slice of pizza or hours for home care or any myriad of different things, and then go to the other side of the street and have a completely different wage scale. And the challenges that that presents both for business and also for the consumers is just, it's mind-blowing.
Well, look, there's a perfect example of this. 10 years ago, San Francisco was this sort of island of regulation and higher cost and whatever. And there's a reason why the city of South San Francisco exists, okay? It exists because people want to be out of the San Francisco jurisdiction. And yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about, because people could literally go a block, be in South San Francisco, and as long as they didn't dip their toe into the city of San Francisco, they could operate at much cheaper prices. And when you're on the peninsula, who cares if you're hiring a South San Francisco company or a San Francisco company? It doesn't matter. But it's worse. Like, truly, here's your example. You have to pay for travel time, okay? And generally, most of these minimum wage ordinances for a city say that if you spend more than 2 hours in a work week, you're subject to our travel time ordinance. I'm sorry, our minimum wage ordinance. Okay, well, it's not uncommon to spend over a work week 2 hours in travel time. So if you've got somebody who's driving through the city of Richmond or Oakland or San Jose or any of those tightly packed Bay Area communities, all of a sudden you have to pay travel time at the higher rate just for the time going through those communities.
Right.
As stupid as that is. And so what happens then is you don't want to mess with that.
Right.
So you're going to drive up your wages to whatever the lowest minimum wage is. So all of a sudden, this one city has taken your company up to its minimum wage level and raised costs for everybody, including for most people who aren't in a city that has that minimum wage.
Yeah.
It's insane. And then it takes you as a competitor and puts you in a worse position as opposed to the small guy who's just in his own city who doesn't have that.
Right.
Yeah. So I think, and again, our audience is typically healthcare professionals. So for those out there that are maybe a case manager or social worker, physician, work in this space, you may not know all the nitty-gritty of the home care industry. One thing I think all of us will agree, we want our caregivers, we want the caregivers to do well. We want them to.
Absolutely.
The challenge our industry has in home care is the seniors, like Bob mentioned earlier, who may be on the Social Security or may have families helping support the cost, they're the ones paying. We don't have this unlimited stream of money to help offset the wage increases in home care. It's your mom, the folks who are listening. It's your mom. It's you who are paying that bill. So we would love these wonderful caregivers who are doing really tough work in really tough environments to make more. What we see, though, is the seniors just can't afford it a lot of the time. So that's why you kind of hear some of this discussion and maybe a tone of frustration periodically when people talk about this.
Well, let me just interject. You think about it, and like, let's talk about live-in care.
Sure.
It used to be that you could deduct sleep time and there was no overtime. So you'd pay for 16 hours a day at $8 an hour, and it was $128 a day. That's what it was. Now you can't deduct sleep time and you've got federal and state overtime. So that caregiver at the minimum wage of $10 an hour has to be paid $315 a day. Right. Okay. And that's assuming you're lucky enough to not live in a city that has a higher minimum wage.
Right.
Okay. $315 a day. And that's what the caregiver has to be paid. And obviously there's costs to the home care agency. So you have to charge more than that. Who can afford this?
Yeah.
Honestly, who can afford this? It's become so unsustainable that I don't know how this model works.
Yeah, so that's in California, Bob. Any other states share that mindset?
So there's national, federal overtime now. Everywhere in the country, caregivers have to be paid overtime after 40 hours in a week.
Right. How about on the live-in?
Which also doesn't make sense because it's 9 hours in a day.
Of course.
And 40 hours in a week. They couldn't make it easier and do 9:45.
I guess I should have been more specific. Our understanding is in 49 other states... sleep time can be
deducted. Oh, right. Of course. Yes. In other states, sleep time can be deducted. And so that really hurts live-in. So now you're faced with paying an exorbitant amount of money or having multiple caregivers. But that impacts the quality of care. I mean, you know, with Alzheimer's patients, they get alarmed if they see different people when they wake up and versus when they go to sleep. And it's problematic. Plus, who wants a merry-go-round of caregivers coming through your house?
Yeah. So let's backtrack to the live-ins because we, Zach and I, spend most of our time in like I said, off Pop Health Podcast in the home care space. If you're speaking to consumers out there or healthcare professionals who refer families to companies that do health or that do caregiving, what should the minimum charge for a live-in be? Let's say they just a caregiver, including taxes and all of that. What is the actual cost? $350, $375 just for the labor?
So the the wages for someone who works 24 hours, and by the way, this is assuming they don't do that for more than 40 hours in a week, because after you hit 4.5 days, everything is overtime. Okay, right. So this is for the first the first 40 hours in a week.
Okay,
that caregiver at $10 an hour has to be paid $315. You double check my math, but it's the first 9 hours at $10 an hour and the next 15 hours at $15 an hour. So I believe that's $315.
Okay.
And that's assuming, again, that you don't have a higher county or municipal minimum wage.
Got it.
Okay. Then you have to add on payroll taxes, which at a minimum are about 10% of that. Okay. And then there's all these other costs that you have, workers' comp and your own overhead. A rule of thumb used to be in this industry that you take whatever the wages were for the caregiver, double it, and that's what you charge. But that would be $630 a day.
Right.
And yet that allowed just for a reasonable profit margin.
Yeah.
But now you're not charging that because it's too expensive. But I mean, I'm seeing home care agencies for live-ins charge $480, $500. You know, I mean, I frankly don't know how you make the math work anything under $375, to be honest with you.
So when we hear families or we hear healthcare professionals referring families to companies that charge $200, $250 a day, how would you respond to
it's,
that?
I guarantee if they require that caregiver to be there, okay, I guarantee you it's flat out illegal. Okay. And what's going to happen is they're going to get caught one way or the other. And it's probably, ironically, everybody's worried about like an audit or whatever. I got to be honest with you. The Department of Labor is not concerned with some grandmother who is, you know, maybe shorting the caregiver. But who is concerned is that plaintiff's lawyer. Not necessarily because that plaintiff's lawyer is an altruistic individual, but that plaintiff's lawyer is concerned because he or she is going to reap 40% of whatever is owed. And I see these cases all the time because in our practice, we represent home care agencies, but we represent families who directly employ people. The bills or the amount owed is staggering because here's what happens. When that plaintiff's lawyer sues you, if you owe them money, generally speaking, you'll owe tens of thousands of dollars if you don't pay the sleep time. Whatever you owe is automatically doubled under both federal and state law. Okay, so if you owe 10 grand, it becomes 20. Plus, they get attorney's fees. Plus, there are additional penalties if the state or the court finds fraud or malfeasance or something like that, willfully doing things.
Yeah.
And there's interest. So you took a $5,000 problem and it becomes a, without exaggeration, $25,000, $30,000, potentially even $50,000 problem.
Got it. Yeah. So very good information out there for both healthcare professionals and families that are listening in. Just make sure you're hearing what Bob said and make sure you know the facts. Let's talk a little bit about what the facts are. So when hiring a caregiver.
And let me just interject. That's why I think it's absolutely critical. If you're a professional in this field and you're considering hiring somebody, you have to go with a reputable company. Okay, because if you think you're going to save money by going with some fly-by-night organization, somebody that is charging $100, $200 a day, you've put the client at risk and you've put yourself at risk potentially, because if you're a fiduciary or a trustee or someone like that, that's potentially malpractice if you haven't investigated what's going on. And if you say, oh, well, the company's the employer, not always, because sometimes the company has no money. And those plaintiff's attorneys will go after anyone with pockets.
Yep.
And that means that you, your client is on the hook as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about the different types of ways of hiring a caregiver. We usually like to touch on this annually just to educate the community. And I understand there's kind of three ways to hire. You can do a direct hire, which is an option where the family or the person receiving the care could be the employer. There's also what's known as a referral agency or a direct referral agency, DRA, DRE. And then a licensed home care organization. Can you kind of educate the audience very briefly the difference in those three?
Sure. So a licensed home care agency is what I would consider to be the gold standard, because you supervise, you train, you replace if there's a problem or somebody's sick. You handle everything. And like we said off mic, you know, my mom lives in Massachusetts. I'm here in California. If I needed somebody, I would use a full service employer based home care agency, because I want the certainty of knowing that someone is going to look after that caregiver in that situation. So using a home care agency, they do it all. And there is a cost to that. But to me, that also, the reward is a peace of mind. On the other side of the spectrum is the direct hire. So a direct hire means you are the employer. And it can be cheaper. But you have the responsibility of taxes. You have the responsibility of all the new hire paperwork. You're the one who must supervise and fire. And if that caregiver's out sick, you're the one who has to find a replacement. I think direct hire can make sense in cases where maybe you know the person really well. Maybe you only need a few hours of care. Maybe you're very close by and can drop by. For smaller, manageable situations, I get that. I truly do. And we help families do that. But the larger this becomes, and that's the funny thing about home care, it always snowballs. Everyone thinks, oh, I only need a few hours, or oh, I only need a week or two, and it's just, it never stops. The larger it becomes, the more important it is to have someone handle this for you. Now, in the middle are direct referral agencies. They're also called registries or DRAs or employment agencies under California law. They look sort of like full service home care agencies. In fact, it's, in many cases, it's very difficult to tell them apart. And they'll say, we'll get you somebody. And for some reason, they're substantially cheaper than the full service home care agencies. And so, of course, you'd say, well, I'm going to go with ABC or XYZ or whatever the name of the registry is. As it turns out, registries are required by law to make certain disclosures to the caregivers and to the families that they're in an employment relationship. And many registries don't. So what happens is the registry gets a fee for just referring this caregiver. But the caregiver is the employee of the family. The family doesn't know that. And the registry keeps getting paid. I don't understand that relationship, to be perfectly honest with you. If you want to directly hire somebody, then go ahead and directly hire somebody. Right. But I don't understand why you would pay an ongoing fee when, by law, the registry can't manage that relationship.
Right.
I don't get what they do to warrant that. Now, there is a slight difference. Some registries are sort of more in a staffing agency model, and they'll say, we'll find you a caregiver, we'll do a background check, and you pay us a flat upfront fee. That I understand. Okay, because you're doing the work for me, and you're going to pay me, you're going to get me somebody, and I'll pay you a certain amount of money for it. But to do it on an ongoing basis, I don't really understand that business model, and I don't understand the benefits of the consumer either.
Got it. So what if the family says, well, the registry sent me an independent contractor?
Right, and I would tell you that they might as well have sent you Santa Claus, because it's illegal. there is, in the state of California, there is no such thing as a caregiver who is an independent contractor as a matter of law. They are supervised, they are controlled, right. And they are an employee.
I always like to tell people about that. It's like, you hire an independent contractor if you are trying to replace the plumbing in your house. You have them come out, they give you bids on how they're going to do it, and then they do it the way that they see fit. They come when they feel they should come. You don't tell them how you're going to be here from 9 to 5 today and from 8 to 4 tomorrow. And that's just not how it works in caregiving. The caregivers don't get to make their own schedule when a family is hiring them.
Nor do they get to determine what they do. I mean, generally speaking, when you hire a caregiver, you say, I want you to take mom to the senior center at this time, and mom only eats this, that, or the other. You know, I want you to wash her clothes. You direct what she does.
Right.
Yeah.
And I do want to clarify, too, just for those that may not know, when we're talking about a licensed home care agency, in California, as of January 1st of this year, home care agencies are supposed to be licensed through the Department of Social Services. I would invite anybody that would like any more information on that. We actually have a couple of podcasts with the directors of the Home Care Services Bureau. Please go ahead and check that out. But when we are referring to the licensed home care agencies, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, good point, Zach. So one thing we've heard, there are with some families that we know that have done direct hires. And one thing they've said is, oh, well, I'm directly hiring this person. They don't have to be registered with the state, which is technically, if you're hiring someone privately, it's technically true. But why would a caregiver not register with the state and get that background check?
Right, exactly. I mean, you're absolutely right. You can hire somebody who isn't registered with the state. You can also hire somebody without doing a background check on them. You're not required by law to do that.
And this is for private
hire. Right, for private hire. For private hire. I don't understand why any family would take that risk. And as far as the caregiver, some caregivers will tell you, well, there's an expense to it. There's a hassle to it. I will grant you that, but it's not terribly expensive. I would tell you that, to me at least, the reason why somebody isn't registered is because they can't pass the background check. I mean, that seems to me to be the primary reason why someone wouldn't do it. And it's a real easy fix for this. What you would say if they say, well, it's a lot of money or whatever, I'm happy to pay the $95 or the $135 or whatever it is for you to go ahead and do this. And if they still keep coming up with excuses, I would say there's an issue there.
Yeah, and I think our understanding is
about
the registration.
$120.
Yeah, total cost.
$120. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, the registration. You're right there. It's I think a registration is $25 every 2 years for to be a registered home care aide.
Yep.
And then the background check, depending on where you get your fingerprints rolled, is going to be $80-$90 total cost one time.
Yep.
Only.
Right.
For the lifetime. So I would encourage folks out there who are hiring and it's not a family member or something like that you've known your whole life, really encourage you. It's a very minimal expense, and like Bob said, just be on the lookout.
Just think it's dangerous. I honestly think it's dangerous to hire somebody who has not been background checked and frankly registered with the state. The state has set up a process. And if they can't pass the state background check, why are you hiring them? Yeah.
Now, there are some folks out there who say they've done a background check, but it's not through the state. Or they might say, oh, it's, you know, state of the art, but it's not through the state. Can you tell us the difference between like a maybe like a state-of-the-art background check that's not live scanned versus
sure.
A,
so
a
the beauty of live scan is it requires fingerprinting. Now, look, I don't want to say that any background check is foolproof, because to really do that, you have to go to county courthouses and wherever where they've lived and all of that. But getting someone's fingerprints is a big, important first step. And if you're using a background check that doesn't involve fingerprinting, they can manufacture documents. They can lie about things. It's not, in my opinion, anywhere near as trustworthy as actually using fingerprints. Yeah. And that's what LiveScan does.
And the neat thing, I think you can confirm this, is with the state's requirement with live scanning is if, not just before you run the background check, but if you're the employer, any subsequent issue, and you have rights to that background check. So let's say, for example, you hire a caregiver and a year later they have a DUI or something like that. You actually get alerted.
That's exactly right. And by the way, this is not a new concept. For example, if you hire a nanny through a nanny agency, by law, they have to go through something called Trustline. The nanny has to register with Trustline, which is a sex offender registry, but also fingerprint based. Yeah. So for years and years and years, the state has said, basically, if you're going to care for someone, whether it be a child or an elderly or disabled person, the safest and best way to go is to have fingerprints as part of the background check. And I agree with that entirely.
Yeah. So to wrap all of that up into a bow, if you were talking to, say, a discharge planner or someone who had a role in actively advising people on hiring home care, hiring someone in their home, what would you suggest to them? You know, be it whether hiring an agency or hiring privately, kind of in a nutshell, what would you suggest is a best practice there?
The first thing you want to look at for a home care agency is, are they registered with the state? because that will separate the home care agencies from the DRAs or the registries that are masquerading themselves as home care agencies. If they don't have an HCO number, they're not registered with the state.
Right.
Okay. So if you're going to use an agency, I would tell you that's the first thing you should do, because then you have the confidence of knowing that anyone that that agency sends out is also registered with fingerprints, just like we talked about.
And you can search those on the DSS website.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And by the way, the state, you know, is going to come knocking at your door and doing inspections and all of this, so it's not a one-time sort of thing. They're right. keeping tabs on these agencies. So that's the first thing I would ask. And then in terms of if you're going to hire privately, I would absolutely require that that caregiver have a background check through the state. And by the way, it's smart for the caregiver too. Like that caregiver who's registered with the state, she's gold, okay? Because then she can say, I'm registered and here's all my information and the confirmation of it, and they're worth their weight in gold. Because what we found, you talked about like the impact of licensure, a lot of caregivers got weeded out. I mean, I've had a number of home care agencies that lost 10, even 15% of their caregivers who couldn't pass the state background check, which is pretty scary.
Right.
And so now caregivers are hard to find. So all the more important to get the good ones.
And I do want to point out for people, just because that's a jarring number, when the live scans were implemented, there were two things that kind of changed with that for home care agencies. One is that it became a lifetime background check, whereas a lot of the background checks that were run before were somewhere in a period of around 7 years or so. Plus, any infraction above a driving infraction basically had to have a special exemption directly from Department of Social Services. So when you hear that 10 to 15% of the caregiving force was lost in some places, that's where those changes came from. I do want to ask you, where do you see kind of the industry moving? Do you see a path to home care being, you know, an insurance funded, or where do you see it kind of moving forward from where we are right now?
I see the industry kind of fragmenting into really two spaces. One is sort of the full service home care agency space. And whether you know it or not, and whether you like it or not, all of a sudden you guys have become sort of like the Four Seasons. You're the high cost, and you have to adapt to that and also provide the high end of service. And many home care agencies still don't understand that.
Right.
They think, well, as long as I can undercut my competitor, who's the home care agency down the block, I'm going to be fine. And that's just not the case, because it's not down the block. It's the guy online or whatever. So I see home care kind of like lodging. You've got full service hotels and you've got Airbnb.
Yeah.
Okay. And Airbnb is fine. And that's sort of the analogy there is like the private hire. Okay. But that's not for everybody. I think most people would prefer the comfort and amenities and security of a full service hotel when they travel. And that's great. And that's what you guys are. But the problem is that most home care agencies don't recognize this. They're still trying to compete on price, which obviously you have to.
Right.
But it's you have to justify your price with service.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said.
And I would encourage people too. There's actually, with what we talked about earlier about home care coming into the national picture a lot more, there actually has been a significant amount of talk with the election cycle coming right now, kind of about how the industry might move forward and ways to possibly either keep it affordable or, you know, make sure that the caregivers, again, are making a living wage. And so I would really encourage people to go ahead and check that out, because there are a lot of different ideas that are being thrown out, and it could really impact kind of the industry. And we see such a push of people having their care at home, you know, staying in the hospital less or even going to the hospital less and having all of these things in their home, which is great. People recover better. They have better results in their home. But there are a lot of things that are probably going to be decided pretty soon that will have a big impact on kind of how the industry looks moving forward.
Yeah. So last question for me, Bob, is you know, with all the changes we were talking off the air about, some home care companies just have kind of said, you know what, this is too much for me to handle. And in your experience, have you seen some companies merging or transition clients to another agency?
Sure. And we saw it, frankly, the largest part of it was in the fourth quarter of last year before licensing came into play. People were closing their doors or they were selling. What's interesting now is that you're seeing this year more and more people trying to sell because they thought they could handle it. And they've now lived through 10 months of it and realize that the costs and the hassle of doing this are too much. So without exaggeration, in the past, I don't know, 2 months, I've probably had 6 clients who've said, I would like to sell. Do you know anyone who wants to buy?
Yeah.
It's been a very grueling process. But you know what? Like we said off the air, this separates the wheat from the chaff. And I think what you're going to, I've said this to everybody, if you can survive, the best are going to thrive. And I believe that entirely.
Well said, Bob. I know one of those 6, I believe, you connected with us. So we appreciate that opportunity. And like you said, you know, the strong survive. The organizations that have built the robust teams are going to be fine. And we do think overall licensure is great for the industry. I think we can probably all agree on that. And really look forward to moving forward. Bob King has been our guest. Zach, take it away.
Yeah, we really appreciate having you on. It's always nice to have a perspective of somebody that sees the big picture of changes, you know, not just here in Southern California, but nationwide. I would encourage people to check out Bob's website, legallynanny.com. Really quickly, just in case people don't know, why Legally Nanny?
Sure, because 14 years ago, we hired a nanny and for my daughter, and we were determined to do it legally. And I was a lawyer working for a big firm with big clients, and nobody knew the law on home care. And I researched it and said there's got to be a market for it. And the irony now of Legally Nanny is we probably do 85 to 90% home care. People have suggested we change the name to Legally Granny or something, but but we are what we are. And we represent home care agencies and nanny agencies and families who hire directly. We work nationwide, based here in California. So whatever we can do on legal or tax issues, happy to do it.
And Bob is also an active speaker and advocate. And if you have any questions, I would feel free, or I would encourage you to reach out to him and Legally Nanny. They're a great resource. Also, social media.
Sure. So find us on. So I don't really write newsletters. I don't have time to do it, and people don't have time to read them. But every week, at least 2 or 3 times a week, we give you some sort of legal update for the household employment industry. So check us on Facebook and on Twitter and on LinkedIn. You'll find it, and you'll hear about it. And in fact, I'll have a picture from today up on
Absolutely.
There at some point. So
yeah, and Bob is actually a great LinkedIn resource, Legally Nanny on LinkedIn. He spreads a lot of good information there. So Bob, thanks again for being on. This has been another production of Pop Health Podcast. We really enjoy recording these, and we appreciate you listening. Again, you can find us on our website at pophealthpodcast.com. You can also find me on Twitter at pophealthzach, and Gavin
at Gavin Pop Health.
There we go. We're just trying to trick you a little bit. So at pophealthzach and at Gavin Pop Health. You can also find us in the App Store, on iTunes, wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you so much, and have a great day.